We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello! Welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Now, first up, a huge thanks to everyone who came out for the Sydney Comedy Festival. I had a great time, despite the mild flooding rains and the ensuing cold that they gave me. I do look forward to coming back at some point. So if I do come out again, it was excellent. I had a very fun time. But we do need to focus on the now. And this very episode, which is distracting you from the horrors of your work commute, or distracting you from the horrors of the knowledge that Cthulhu lies just out there, just beyond the boundary of the sea, and providing distraction for the thin, bony Faraday cage of your skull that holds back the constant knocking of the unknowable and the unfathomable. Or maybe we're just helping you get through some household chores, each to their own. However you listen to the podcast is correct. Now, this episode is brought to you by National Lost Sock Memorial Day. We all face the endless, ceaseless disappearance of socks in our lifetime, be it from a holiday, a washing machine, or the brave souls that were lost in the Great War against the sock-stealing beasts, which will henceforth be known as the Great Battle for the Souls. Though, we should note that these souls are in fact not lost. They were sacrificed to keep the dark gods and incomprehensible horrors in the dark recesses of the washing machines across the world. We salute you, brave souls, and thank you for your duty. This episode is also brought to you by the play that I am currently helping to produce at Theatreworks this coming June and July. It's called The Platypus. And it is a sort of darkish romantic comedy about relationships and about the ways we perceive them and when we're in them and out of them. It's an excellent piece. It was written by and directed by Francis Greenslade, who you may know as one of the performers from Mad as Hell. So if you enjoy Francis's madcap wonder, then you should definitely come out and check out the play. It's a really fun time. Now, as for my own shows, I'll be bringing them to a few places near you soon. I'm looking at locking in some dates before too long. I'm in talks with some places at the moment, so we will figure that out when we figure that out. But hopefully I'll be able to bring one of my stand-up and storytelling shows your way pretty soon. But until then, of course, I will be the bearer of weird news. So, let's start with the headlines. Australia's defence budget will be given an extra $50 billion over the next decade as part of a shake-up of the Australian military. Now, no official reports on how the money is meant to be spent exist just yet, but early speculation is that it will be spent on roughly 6 submarines, 3 more American Army bases, and the persecution of at least 10 whistleblowers. So you know, that's money well spent. We're getting a lot of destruction for your dollars. Japan may be considered to be joining the AUKUS alliance, an announcement that has rattled both China and acronym enthusiasts. I mean, come on, how do we seamlessly fit any of the letters of Japan into the already clunky acronym that we have, AUKUS? AUKUS. There's just no natural way to fit Japan inside that collection of letters. Although, Japan's military might will be a welcome addition to AUKUS, as our Gundam and Kaiju divisions are currently desperately low. Godzilla will be a strong addition to the underwater arsenal, and the nice thing is that it will be arriving before 2030. The Swiss Women's Association Senior Women for Climate Protection has secured a historic win. So this is the European Court of Human Rights' first ever condemnation of a country for failing to take action against climate change, faulting Switzerland for not doing enough to tackle global warming. And guys, this is Switzerland. Like, they do a lot of things pretty damn good. More than 2,500 women all aged over 64 argued their age and gender made them particularly vulnerable to climate impacts, and that's pretty fair, but these women are going to be really mad when they learn how bad it's going to be for the children who actually have to live through the climate apocalypse. Whoa, they're going to be so mad! According to Heinz in the UAE, 48% of its customer base encounters what they call ketchup-related accidents frequently. In response, Heinz introduced ketchup insurance, which accommodates for 57 distinct claims, addressing a wide range of ketchup mishaps, including what they call the mega squeeze, where ketchup disperses in all directions, Heinz sight, attempting to squeeze the bottle with a loose nozzle, causing temporary vision impairment, and young Picasso. The claimant's offspring uses ketchup for artistic purposes, resulting in a messy masterpiece. Look, it does make sense when you realise that insurance is really for situations where you're in a bit of a tight squeeze. I mean, hot dog! This is a bit of a wonderful idea, right? Word is that they will be working fast on cases so that they will never have to catch up. But I can't find a reliable source on that information. You know, actually, in hindsight, insurance might be the most logical road for a company like this, as insurance policies do have a habit of bottling things up. An Ohio man was caught on camera pointing a gun at a Burger King employee who was offering him a discount on his order. Now, don't shoot the messenger, but I hear, in keeping with tradition, the NRA immediately called him up and offered him a position in leadership. They refused accusations that he had gone off half-cocked, calling him a real straight shooter. Australia Post has announced that they will be halving the amount of days that they will be delivering letters as a generational shift in the nation's postal services takes effect. When asked about the announcement, Australia Post said that there was no need for them to deliver letters 5 days a week, as they weren't delivering letters most days anyway. This just makes it official. Computational scientist and mathematician Avi Widgerson has won the Turing Award for his work helping to prove that randomness is not required for efficient computation. And look, not a moment too soon if you ask me. I'm so sick of my computer unexpectedly turning off and on again and then being like, lol, I can't believe that happened. I'm so random. I'm the most random one in my computer group, you know? I'm the most random one in my LAN party. Everyone says so. Fucking annoying, that's what I tell you. Biofuel company Firefly plans to develop the world's first commercial scale factory, turning human waste into sustainable aviation fuel. You'll always know when they're flying overhead, as their new fuel always leaves streaks. No word of a lie. They've developed this deal with an airline known as Wizz Air, which, come on, like, it's just very intentionally on the nose. I hear that they wanted to make a deal with Flying Turd Airways, but Qantas actually refused to take their calls. The good news is that to encourage people to fly on their airships, they will be giving away free meals on every flight. The bad news is that all of their meals are curries with beans. We've got to keep that bird in the air somehow. That's the end of the headlines, and we're moving on now to the bigger news. Starting off with zombie bug news, zombies! Despite being a long-standing metaphor for fear of humanity's inhumanity towards humanity, the otherness of people that we can't communicate with, or science slash a disease gone wild, depending on how you feel about science at the time, it's not very often that zombies actually make the news, mostly due to their entirely fictional nature. But occasionally, nature will provide us with a direct, there but for the grace of nature goes us moment, as we see yet another bug species has presented us with the literary fuel for another apocalyptic monster comparison just by existing in the horror show that is nature in general. So what are we up against this time? I'll let the good people at CBS do the hyperbole for me. Hypersexual zombie cicadas that are infected with sexually transmitted fungus expected to emerge this year. Oof. Are you scared yet? Because it gets worse. The zombie bugs are cicadas, which number in the trillions. They are set to emerge across several US states this spring, or as the Americans call it, jump. Because they love to come up with fun new names for things that nobody else uses. An event that one expert dubbed Cicada-geddon. Ugh, come on. This is entirely because we lack interesting suffixes anymore, right? If it wasn't a geddon, it'd be apocalypse. If it wasn't apocalypse, it'd be a Zilla or some kind of holic. Maybe a gate of some kind or a blanky McBlank blink. And I'm getting a little sick of this apoca-suffix-geddon-mcgeddon-face-zilla. It's getting out of control, okay? I'm just sick of it. We need to come up with some new suffixes. So not only are there more cicadas than usual expected this year, some of them will be the aforementioned zombie cicadas. Clearly cicadas that have migrated across the multiverse from the Walking Dead universe, or maybe the George A. Romero zombie cinematic universe, the ZCU, or even the Shaun of the Dead universe, as they do have some red on them. They'll wander the land, unable to slake their undead desire for grains. Grains! These zombies are, in fact, infected by a sexually transmitted fungus that makes them hypersexual. An army of super horny zombie bugs roaming the land. Matthew Casson, an associate professor of mycology and forest pathology at West Virginia University, says this year's broods can be infected by a fungal pathogen called Massapora cicadina. Once the cicadas molt into adults, generally within a week to 10 days, the fungus causes the backside of their abdomens to open up, and then a chalky white plug erupts out, taking over their bodies and making their genitals fall off. Ugh. If you weren't scared before, now's the time. And you thought you were the most kinky one in your friendship group. You still have your genitals, motherfucker. You're so vanilla compared to these horny zombies. Casson told CBS, there's this hypersexualized behavior. So males, for example, they'll continue to try and mate with females unsuccessfully because, again, their back end is a fungus. But they'll also pretend to be females to get males to come to them. And that doubles the number of cicadas that an infected individual comes in contact with. See, usually cicadas will let out a loud humming sound to attract female cicadas, right? And the female will flick her wings to signal that she wants to mate. But this fungus has males flicking their wings, like females, to attract males in order to, well, in turn infect them. Because the fungus is sexually transmissible. It's an STD. They're spreading zombieism as an STD. It's a Ben Shapiro film waiting to happen as the genderless zombies, driven by their lustful intoxicating high, seducing the youth of the world in an attempt to infect them with their new zombie way of life, their genderless agenda. I can see it already happening, and it's quite lazy. Obviously, the gaping-mouthed content churn buckets at Fox and Sky News are already preparing some stories about their gender pretenders spreading their genderless agenda. They get really upset about this sort of thing. It just riles them up to no end, and then they can't sleep at night. You've got to stop upsetting them this way, CBS and the world. I can hear it right now. You ready? Here we go. This is what it will sound like. Can you believe this? Can you believe this? These gender non-conforming promiscuous slutty zombie bugs corrupting our youth with their woke hiding underground for 17 years zombie bug ideals. I mean, this stuff practically writes itself. It's not even that hard. Casson also said the cicada continues to participate in normal activities, like it would if it was healthy. Like, it tries to mate, it flies around, it walks on plants, yet a third of its body has been replaced by fungus. And that's really kind of bizarre. And look, he's not wrong. See, the reason the cicadas might not be able to ignore the fungus, which, remember, has taken over a third of their body, is that it produces an amphetamine, which could give them stamina. But come to think of it, now that I know that, no, he's completely wrong. See, that's the problem with these academics. They lack any real-world experience. I've seen this exact behaviour in people before. People propelled forward only by the amount of amphetamines flowing through their body, compelled to ceaselessly thrust at their intended sexual partners regardless of any signs of interest and little to no regard for the possibility of passing on any kind of infection that they might already be carrying. If this doesn't sound familiar to you, guys, this is recovery at Revolver. Yeah, that's right, Revolver Nightclub. Anytime after 6 a.m, you will see this exact behaviour demonstrated. Turns out, recovery at Revolver is actually a zombie apocalypse. And I would recommend that you all avoid it at all costs. Moving on now, it is art news. So many of us have dreams and aspirations. For some of us, it's the relentless crushing of the proletariat for endless gains. And others have simpler goals, like seeing our work appreciated in our time. Well, one museum technician services team member was tired of waiting for his dreams to come true and decided to take his destiny into his own hands by secretly hanging his own art in the museum that he worked in. And you know what? Bravo, sir. Bravo. I think this is great. Good on him, right? Good on him. Following his dreams. Actively doing something about it. And this is a gallery that is dedicated to modern and contemporary art. Now, it was full of paintings by people like Warhol and Picasso. And look, that's fine. Because, you know, for the most part, they're fairly contemporary. But some of Picasso's newer paintings, they're over 50 years old. He has paintings that are over 100 years old. That's not contemporary anymore. We need some new paintings, some fresh blood. Sure, you can put some Picasso's in there or some Warhol's in there to drag in the average punter, because they're not going to go to see anything else. But you're going to mix it up, put in some bold new artists. One who's willing to do what it takes to make it in the art world. One who would even go so far as to work in a museum. So the 51-year-old believed hanging the work would be his artistic breakthrough. And instead he may be facing prison time. Prison time! He might be facing prison time! For this? For this. The lowest of low stakes heists. Are you fucking kidding me? He didn't even Ocean's 11 the place. This guy isn't exactly George Clooney. This guy isn't even Elliot Gould, despite his age. What did he do? What did he do to warrant this sort of behaviour? Oh, he drilled two holes into the wall to show his art to people who came to a museum, and this is the wild part, to look at some art. And now the museum has got some free bonus art. What's the issue? He didn't even have to commission it. He's just volunteering art for you, museum. He's not even trying to hide it. Once they saw it, he immediately confessed. He was like, yep, that's me, that's my art. Only to then get fired and reported to the police for property damage. And if he gets convicted, he could face up to 2 years in prison for property damage. Property damage? Boo! You better call a wambulance for this fucking museum, and then you can call an ambulance for me, because after hearing about this, I'm fucking dead. Dead! 2 years in prison! Property damage! Putting this man in prison will not stop him. You understand that, right? You do know that. He'll have 2 years of nothing but time to perfect his craft. Except now, he'll have gained some street cred as a notorious art criminal. He'll be back having painted some kind of introspective series of increasingly explorative self-portraits from inside the Art to Prison pipeline. Everything you do just makes this man more powerful. Picasso had his blue period, yeah? Well, this guy has his orange jumpsuit period. A. If I am completely honest, somewhat snobbish and snarky spokesperson for the gallery, snarkily snarked, the employee considered himself as an artist and most likely saw his role in the museum's installation team as a day job to support his true calling. And then he finished the statement by going, no, twisting his mustache, and I assume then went to tie a maiden to a railroad somewhere. Yeah, no shit, Sherlock. That's called being an artist. Fuck me. Everyone complains that artists don't do real work and they expect everyone to support them while they do their little paintings and write about their feelings. Well, this guy was working for a fucking living in your shitty museum. You know, most famous artists actually have down day jobs. Mark Rothko was a teacher, Keith Haring was a busboy, Jackson Pollock was a babysitter, Kurt Cobain was a janitor, Rod Stewart was a gravedigger, Kurt Vonnegut was a fucking car dealer. Yeah, sure, he was really bad at it, but he still did it. He sucked all the way to the end until he didn't do it anymore. Working at the gallery didn't make you better than this guy. You both worked at the same fucking gallery. Where do you get off with your bullshit comments like the work did not receive any positive feedback from the visitors to the gallery? Oh, were you asking specifically? Did you hold the painting up to people as they walked out and said, what do you think of this? What do you think of this painting? You know what? When I go to an art gallery and I see a painting that I like, I don't immediately pull over a staff member and be like, hey man, that was really good. You know why? Because you hung it up there. You know. And I'm aware that this guy hung his own painting, but still, people like us who go to art galleries, we don't pull the staff aside to be like, oh, you did really good here today. No, nobody's doing that. And you better believe that this is art now, because like most good art, this is art with a story. The main reason that the Mona Lisa is famous, not appreciated by art lovers, but globally famous, why there are queue lines of disappointed gawkers leaving Google reviews that say that they were surprised that there was a queue line to see the world's most famous painting. Well, that's because in 1911 it was stolen, right? So this art is old and it has a story. So now it is globally famous. And this painting that this guy hung in the gallery now has a story. So it just needs to get older. And it's doing that every single day. Now, none of the articles actually showed a picture of the art, and I think that's completely unfair. I want to see the art. I want to make my own judgment. You don't get to make an objective opinion about this guy's art, or what you consider to be an objective opinion. You don't get to shit all over this poor guy's art without at least offering it up for the public to consume and make up our minds about the art. I mean, it's art. We get to judge. That's the way it's always been. That's how art works, motherfuckers. We decide what's good, and then someone who's got a lot of money buys it and launders that money. But that's the way the art world works. This isn't even the first time that this sort of thing has been done. Banksy made a household name for himself by smuggling artworks into the world's most famous museums, including the Tate Britain, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and MoMA. And not all galleries are assholes like this, I will say that. So, there was this artist, Danai Amanuldis, who added her own painting to an exhibition at the, and I do apologise, I think I'm going to butcher this, Bundeskes Unthale in Bonn. It hung there undetected for the rest of the exhibition. When the museum finally worked it out, it then went on social media and posted, hey, we think this is funny, and we would like to get in touch with the artist, so please get in touch. There will be no trouble. To go and threaten this guy with prison I mean, he must have really done some proper damage to this museum, like bordering on major reconstruction or, you know, something like that, to be able to send him away for 2 years for what is essentially two holes in the wall. Did he hit, like, a pipe? Like, what's going on here? Did the holes do major structural damage? Oh, no. No, of course they didn't. Why would they? Seems the total damage is estimated at around 100 euro. 2 years in prison for 100 euro? Fuck me. No wonder the UK wanted to leave the EU. If you're going to get in that much trouble over 100 euros damage, none of their politicians would have survived. None of them. Moving on now, it is athletics news. Trans athletes are making news again after they continuously smash world record after world record, completely dominating all sports the world over and making those old-fashioned binary conforming athletes redundant. Oh. Oh, what's that? Oh. Oh, yeah. You might notice that it is achingly quiet now, and that is... That is the sound of the very few trans athletes who have actually managed to carve out medals in the incredibly competitive world of Olympic level sports. It's not their fault that it's so tough. It's literally the measure by everything else we measure things. Yet, after the success of Will and Grace and some spicy protests made it not okay to be openly homophobic, hardcore conservatives found that they had to find a new group to pour all of their hate into. And that is how we arrived at netball being the latest sport to ban transgender athletes from competing at an international level. Let me just say... So, eligibility for international level women's netball will now be restricted for those recorded as female at birth, with the only exception being for transgender athletes who could, quote, establish to world netball's satisfaction that they have not experienced the biological effects of testosterone at any time. Why, netball? Are you trying to impress the church? Is that what this is about? Because I know, like, that they recently came out and they said some nonsense. What did they say? Oh yeah, they said that gender confirmation operations and surrogacy were grave threats to human dignity. Ooh, putting them on par with abortion and euthanasia as practices that violate God's plan for human life. Right. Sure. But world netball. Come on. You don't need to impress the church. You don't. You don't need friends like that. The church are hypocrites. They're a bunch of men in dresses telling the world that men in dresses have no dignity. Hypocrites like that aren't friends that are worth having. You can do better, world netball. You can do better. Sure. I will grant you that a lot of athletes do, thank God, but see, here's the thing. They are young and they are fit. And if they can get the right endorsement deal, they are gonna be very rich. Of course they think God is with them. They haven't lived out here in the real world with the rest of us. World netball, you're a business. You need to learn from the turning tide of other businesses and do some of that rainbow washing that we've been giving you shit for so many years. Now, I will grant you, we have been giving you shit for many years for this exact sort of thing, and it is very empty ass kissing. And we all know, nobody actually believes that you think this sort of stuff, but at least you're pretending to be on the right side of history. And let's be honest, Gen Z loves a little bit of ass eating, so they'll eat that shit up. And look, this is not the only sport to step up and tighten their rules. the global governing bodies for cricket, cycling, athletics, swimming, and chess have all tightened their participation rules for transgender athletes in elite women's competitions during the past couple of years. And World Rugby released a 38-page draft document claiming that rugby players who are cisgender women, when tackled by a player who has gone through male puberty, are at significantly greater risk of injury. And I get it. I mean, they already have, 68% of their players suffering from CTE. And that is in both amateur and professional players. So if anyone is going to permanently damage their women players, it'll be people who they approve of. Not just anybody, right? Can't just have anybody willy-nilly damaging their players. Only the people that they approve of. Sebastian Coe, the president of World Athletics, which governs global track and field, acknowledged that the science remains unresolved. But the organization decided to bar transgender athletes from international track and field because I'm not going to take a risk on this. Jeez, it's almost as if he thinks sport is bad for the body and that he is exploiting these humans for money. But hey, who am I to judge? He went on to say, we think this is in the best interest of preserving the female category. And let me just say, ew, gross. Sebastian, the female category? Don't talk like that. Nobody likes that, Sebastian. It's weird. It makes people uncomfortable when you talk about women like that. It makes you sound like an incel fresh from finishing his brand new manifesto. Okay? And you probably call it the female category. Blech. Gross. It's worth noting, the policy pertains only to international competition, and World Netball said national governing bodies could choose to modify or even not apply these rules or guidelines if they decided to base their participation rules on other factors. So it wasn't exactly a heroic stance when Netball Australia rejected the world governing body's ban on elite transgender players. But it's still something, right? It's not often that Australia is early on doing what we call the right thing. So, congratulations, Netball Australia. And good on you. Good on you for doing the right thing. And like I said, early for a change. Very strange of us. So, surely all of the trans players will have a lot to say on the matter. Shall we have a clip of that somewhere? Anyone? Surely. Well, surely someone is thankful. Oh. What's that? There are no transgender players in Australia's national competition. Well, that makes a lot more sense. As a country, we were always better with symbolic gestures than we were with actually doing anything that helped somebody who needed some help. I'm sure if we had some trans players, we'd currently be dragging our feet on the issue, really dithering, taking our time and just humming and going over all the bits and pieces to make sure that we were doing the right thing. But right now, nothing will change, so we can just be like, yeah, we allow it. We don't have to defend them when it comes to going into an international competition, so we can just say like, oh, well, look how cool we are. We allow it. And all of this business about trans players, I mean, it's just the same, a new version of the oldest, old school behaviours in sports. So International Olympic Committee founder and gold medal winner for literature in the 1912 Summer Olympics for his poem Ode to Sport, Pierre de Coubertin described women's sports as impractical, uninteresting, unaesthetic, and as we are not afraid to add, incorrect. De Coubertin declared, the Olympic spirit required the solemn and periodic exaltation of male athleticism based on internationalism by means of fairness in an athletic setting, with the applause of women as the reward. See, now, That sounds like the opening paragraph of your manifesto, the female category. Right? See how that's how you sound when you say things like the female category. But look at this. Look at this nonsense, right? They wouldn't allow women in sports. They finally did. And now they are desperately fighting to protect women's sports, like it's an endangered condor losing its home to habitat destruction. Actually, more than like a condor, because nobody actually fought anywhere near as hard to protect the condor as they are fighting to protect something that isn't even in danger. The female category of women's sports. It's interesting that this is only ever seen to apply in one direction. You know what I mean? Like, I've looked and I couldn't find any bans on trans men competing in male sports, despite their estimation that it would actually just be the same problem, right? A bunch of cis men overpowering a bunch of women. Sure, they've tried testosterone and they've been, what was it? They've had the advantage of testosterone, but not nearly as much. So, because they don't consider trans athletes to have like actually crossed that gender divide, this is a pretty strong inconsistency, because they're worried about male athletes beating up female athletes, but they'll allow female athletes, in their estimation, compete against male athletes, which would just result in male athletes beating up female athletes. You know what I mean? Do you see the inconsistency? But protect the women. Look at it. The women. Something will happen to the women. These toughest, fittest women in the world who would be tougher than most average men. But the women. See, I've noticed a few of these anti-trans folk are also the same kind of people who proclaim that abortion is murdering a baby. That a shapeless blob of crumpled cells that hasn't developed is somehow representative of the human form. And that is indeed a human and should be considered a human. And as such, it is afforded the rights of a human and therefore can't be aborted, or as they call it, murdered. Well, what they never seem to consider, or maybe they just don't know, is that this little fact is that all humans start as females, regardless of how they end up down the road. It is the reason that men have nipples. It's a just in case we stay that way. Nipples are nature's contingency plan. So logically, follow me, logically, if all babies are humans from the beginning, as they assert, and all humans start as women, as science has proven, and some of those women later become men in life, because, you know, you get that extra chromosome and BAM! You're a man, baby! And not a, like a man baby, but like a baby. You're a man. Baby. Specifically a trans man, baby. And you made, look, these guys made the rules. Conservatives, you made the rules. And with some help from science, I'm here to inform you that all men are now, in fact, trans men. And I apologize to actual trans men to be lumped in with the rest of us men. But science and conservative dogma combined has made this fresh new hell for you. Because they used to be women, you see. We used to be women. I used to be a woman. All of us used to be women. We realized at some point that we were actually men in a woman's body. And now, a lot of us would prefer it if you actually identified us by our masculine pronouns. So please and thank you. And because so many of these very same people are so actually obstinate about referring to people by their preferred pronouns instead, referring to them by their old pronouns, by their original pronouns, before they discovered who they were and made an active choice about their pronouns, well, that means that you'd best refer to all men, no matter where they live, no matter how they think they are, no matter how masculine they think they are, all men now are she, hers. And I do apologize to all women, both trans women and cis women, for lumping all men in the she, her category. I understand that that is Unfair to put us all in there with you. You've been trying so hard to escape us for the most part, even going so far as to preferring to hang out with a bear. But I don't make the rules. I just get stuck abiding by them. See what happens when you push your silly gender agenda ideas on the rest of us? All of us, we just want to be respectful, okay? We just want to be respectful to your beliefs. Your silly, silly beliefs. Though if I am honest, for people who are determined to do away with the gender binary and open our minds to the fluidity of the gender spectrum, I've got to ask this very important question. Why are they so determined to be bound by the binary of men's and women's sports? You know what I mean? Like, why would we stick rigidly with men's and women's sports? They need to start the campaign. They need to start the movement to rise above it all, to demand a third category, the non-binary category. And they can invite anyone who wants to compete, regardless of how stupid they behave. And finally, we've moved on to defamation news. Yes, it was inevitable that we were going to get here. And I completely understand if you don't want to sort of listen to any of this stuff, but I promise you, it's the best version of this story you're going to get. But I totally understand if you're going to tune out now. If you are, please come and check out the live shows. Otherwise, let's get into it. It's time to talk about former political staffer and human embodiment of the phrase. Are you sure that that's how things went? Bruce Lerman. Because Bruce Lerman has been back in the news recently after suing Network 10 and journalist Lisa Wilkinson over a 2021 interview regarding Brittany Higgins' rape allegations. Well, actually, and I've been waiting a long time to say this without consequences. In a 2021 interview regarding the credible accusations of Brittany Higgins against filthy rapist scum Bruce Lerman. Ooh, the truth does roll nicely off the tongue and will set you free. Oh, except for Bruce Lerman, who will fuck up completely. So how did Lerman go from alleged to confirmed in such a small amount of time? Let's get into it. I mean, it's the same way that they all do. He got cocky, in this case, more than one way. Network 10 had a major court victory when it successfully argued for the Lerman defamation case to be reopened based on new information in the form of four affidavits from Seven producer Tyler Aubash. Aubash helped make the 2023 Trial and Error episode of Spotlight, which featured an exclusive interview with Lerman in which the former political staffer declined raping Higgins. The interview, which was filmed after Lerman's criminal trial collapsed due to juror misconduct, became a finalist for the Walkley Awards Scoop of the Year. Now, for those who don't know, the Walkleys are the Logies for journalism, but even less people know what they are. Although, there's probably just as much coke in the green room. And to my knowledge, they've never rescinded a Logie Award. Not even after Bert Newton called Muhammad Ali the boy, or all of the sexual assault claims. Whereas this Walkley nomination was rescinded after court proceedings revealed Seven had paid an estimated $100,000 in rent for Lerman over a year in a financial deal that had not been disclosed to the judging panel. And let me just pause there. $100,000 for rent. Where was this guy staying? Inner city Sydney? Fuck me. And this is a hard thing to say about credibly accused racist Bruce Lerman, but I have to respect the hustle. Lerman got a lot of things out of this deal. Reimbursement for the cost of illicit drugs and prostitutes, covering perks, including more than $10,000 for Thai massages and flights to Tasmania to play golf, a further $12,000 in rental expenses for Lerman, and an expensive meals, spending $517.97 at Franca, $404 at Chop House, which, if you want to know, includes a $361 tomahawk steak. But of all the things, getting them to pay rent is the biggest grift that there is. Like, nobody wants to pay rent. No, you hear that, landlords? Nobody wants to pay rent. And if he weren't a filthy, filthy rapist, I'd almost admire the grift. But almost $100,000, and you choose to give it to a landlord? You could put a deposit down on a house for that kind of money. You could have got them to cover your mortgage for a year. It just shows the real short-sightedness of this kind of grifter. These Liberal Party scavengers are always looking for immediate benefits and never really planning long-term. They could be spending all of this time taking bribes from solar lobbyists for the rest of time. But instead, they were hanging out with coal lobbyists, desperately hanging on to the past. And while we're at it, solar lobbyists, what the fuck are you doing? Why aren't you offering bribes? You've seen how the system works. But I digress. Seven claims that it did not condone or authorise the payments, that they were a misuse of the corporate credit card. Oh, you don't say. Paying for sex workers and coke, that's not part of the standard expenses that Channel 7 approves. I mean, and let's be honest, while it's not on paper the kind of expenses that they normally approve, this is the same channel that was the home of Hinch, that was the home of Today Tonight, that was the home of the Logies broadcast, the home of Home and Away, and Agro's Cartoon Connection. And you know that Agro was getting up to some real shit behind closed doors. Biggest coke fiend around. The judge also found that defamatory imputations made by Ten and Wilkinson were substantially true, thus quashing Lerman's lawsuit. This is more than 3 months after the 5-week defamation trial ended, and 4 days after the final hearing of additional evidence. Now, if you're listening to this podcast, and I assume that you are, you'll probably have no sympathy for this guy. But I do need you to remember that it was Lerman who, on the 7th of February 2023, fueled by righteous indignity and now it seems maybe some coke, launched the civil defamation proceedings that would ultimately lead to a judge declaring that he raped Higgins. Justice Lee, who oversaw the case, had this incredibly insightful insight to the whole situation, saying of Lerman, "Having escaped the lion's den, Mr. Lerman made the mistake of going back for his hat." And that's just incredible. Chef's kiss, no notes, 10 out of 10 criticism. Like, man should be writing satire. What a great time. Justice Lee also found that Ten's defense of truth had been successful. So, that story again. Much to the surprise of many, Channel 10 has been found to be a credible news source. And this has put great strain on all of Channel 10's, we'll call them news programs for the sake of avoiding defamation. So now they need to be on guard. They have a reputation for telling the truth to uphold. And a reputation for being credible. That is going to be very hard to maintain. Tell you, this is exactly why Sky News has never presented a single piece of credible news in the entire time that it has existed. It's much easier to not maintain a reputation in this sort of thing than it is to hold one up and then keep it. And that's the end of the episode, guys. Thank you so much for hanging around. I really do appreciate those of you who made it all the way to the end. If you do want to support the podcast, please come out to some of the live shows. I'll be touring my own live shows at some point, but do come out to the Platypus, pick yourself up a ticket, and come and see some incredible theatre. And until next time, thank you so much. Goodbye. Thank you.